Hello again. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 17th of September. And we thought we would do our open line for this hour. So if you have suggestions of programs, guests, ideas, please call in. We do this once a month. Today's the day. Here's the number, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655 is the number for you to call. Our lines are filled right now, but we'll just go through the calls, you know, fairly speedy fashion, and we'll get to you soon. Mark from Hubertus is our first caller. Hi, Mark.
Hi. I'm just calling in. My idea was for possibly you have a lot of awesome guests that call in all the time, and just I want to do some good, and I'm not quite sure how to get into the fields or how to get out there, and without a ton of schooling, I'm kind of confused about it. So maybe you could have somebody on that would really have some info, especially for the younger generation, of what we can do to get out there and do some good.
How to get out and do some good. Hey, all right. That's a good way to start the hour. All right, Mark.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks very much for the call. Advice for young people on how to get out there and do some good. Sounds good. Linda is next. Hi, Linda.
Hi, Catherine.
Yes.
Yes, as I said to your screener, I'm just on my way through Wisconsin. I normally don't listen to NPR, but your signal happened to override my satellite, and that was a good thing. But I wanted to say I was fascinated with your last guest there who were had written the article Good Billions After Bad.
Mm-hmm.
There is a book called The Creature from Jekyll Island, which is about the formation of the Federal Reserve back in 1913. They got together at Jekyll Island off the coast of Georgia to formulate this organization, which really amounts, in my mind, to organized crime. The book, The Creature from Jekyll Island, I haven't quite thought the same about Federal Reserve since reading that book. And like I say, it seems to follow up so much of what your previous guests were saying. It's almost as if you could rewrite history looking at their involvement in past wars and conflicts and such. And I would highly recommend that book.
Okay.
I mean, especially since one of the chapters in the book is, it's called Bailout is the Name of the Game.
Huh.
They set up these crises so they can swoop in with more taxpayer money, and it should make people mad as heck. And I mentioned to the screener, I'm on my way back from the march in D.C., and if everyone knew what the Federal Reserve was up to, they would have been there also, and I realize it just wasn't feasible for everyone to be there, but numbers as high as 2.5 million of us were there and expressing a lot of displeasure at the way things are going in the country, and especially the use of our money to fund these crazy things.
Okay, we'll look into that book, and thank you for listening to us, Linda.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. Bye.
Bye.
Wanda from Middleton. Hi, Wanda.
Hi, thank you. There was a wonderful thing on the radio, I think on NPR and probably on Terry Gross, too, in two places, anyway. It was called Puppies Behind Bars. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, okay. And we know you love dogs, so I thought you would love this. What they do is they take puppies and have prisoners raise them.
Oh, yes.
And you know about this.
Yeah, I didn't know that was the name of the program, though.
I think that's the name of the program.
Okay. I have a friend who's done that, who just got a dog that way and loves the dog. So.
Oh, how wonderful.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I just thought you'd love doing this program, and it would give Wisconsin people a chance to know about it.
Any further shows I can do on dogs, Wanda, I will deeply appreciate the suggestion and move forward on it.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, thanks so
yeah,
much.
Yeah, thanks.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Wanda. The number is 800-486-8655. My friend lives in Appleton and got her dog from that kind of program. And, yeah, we should look into that. That would be good. One line is open, and you can take it. 800-486-8655. Mary is next from Milwaukee. Hello, Mary.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm great. I'm calling with an idea that is not a new idea, but an old idea. It's the return of the boarding schools. There is a huge flux right now with the state of our education and the value in the all boys, all girls being in boarding schools. There are several across the country, number one. But number two, a lot of research, a lot of literature that's out there right now that proves the effectiveness of students being in an all-encompassing environment for their high school years.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Did you go to a boarding school, Mary?
I did not, no. I went to an all-girls school, but not to a boarding school, no.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be worth looking at.
Mm-hmm. And there's a movement within the United States of that concept coming back.
Okay.
So, and I'd be very happy to. I don't have it because I'm driving, but I'd be very happy to offer some supporting information to your producer.
Thank you, Mary.
And we'll follow up on that.
Great. Please do that.
Thank you.
Yeah,
bye-bye.
That'd be an interesting show. And you can send supporting information, or if you can't get through today, let me give you my email and Rhonda's email. Please feel free to send us messages any old time about shows you'd like to have on the air. Mine is Dunk, D-U-N-N-K, at WPR.org. Rhonda's is Fanning, F-A-N-N-I-N-G, at WPR.org. We always like to hear from you. Anne from Madison is next. Hi, Anne.
Hi, I really like the last program, and I wanted to say a lot of your programs are one of the only forums in the whole broadcast media structure in this country, besides Amy Goodman, that actually, look into some controversial issues. And a couple of them, I think, should have gotten a Pulitzer Prize because
you've
done a really good job. I had a couple of things. One is I hope you'll continue the coverage of other countries. Excellent publicly paid for health care systems. You did about three that I heard, but I hope you'll continue it. I understood you were going to cover a whole bunch of countries, and
right.
other things seem to have intervened, but I think that's really vital. And I'd love to hear about the lack of enforcement of U.S. antitrust laws. A lot of them have been on the books since the early 1900s, yet, companies are being allowed to get way too big to fail, from banks to pharmaceutical companies, and nobody is doing a darn thing about it, not even our Democratic administration and Congress. And third, I'd like to hear about Don Siegelman, the former governor of Alabama, Democratic governor who was hauled off in the middle of the night and accused of a conflict of interest. I've heard him on Air America a bunch of times. He's a lawyer as well as, very articulate. And he's in danger of being sent to prison now under the Holder Department of Justice for something like 20 years for reappointing someone to a nonprofit hospital board. This is just an outrageous, outrageous, political the use of the justice system to get political opponents. And fourth, Ray McGovern, who I may have been on your show before, a former CIA agent, or not agent, but analyst for, I believe, three decades, has just published a book. And one of his theses is that Obama is actually frightened of CIA henchmen. He knows what they're capable of doing. And that's the reason they're kowtowing to the right in the case of indefinite detention and torture and all the things the Bush administration practiced without any punishment at all.
Okay, Anne, good suggestions. Thank you so much. Let's go next to Mike from Milwaukee. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
The callers are excellent, and she's talking about Ray McGovern is excellent. A former Republican may still be a Republican, but he's where a president has to be afraid of the CIA. Clinton found out real quick with "Don't ask, don't tell" that you don't disturb the military or intelligence. I think that what's happened is that the right has used the word fascism so much now, Islamofascist, feminazi. They don't even know the difference between socialism and fascism, but they throw the words out there. And as a result, we cannot talk about fascism without coming across as a 9/11 conspiracy person. And I really think if the German people were more aware of what was going on in Germany, they could have stood up to that. This author who was cited and talked about in Sarah Robinson's article in truthout.org on August 10th, I'd like to see her as a guest or the author if he's still alive, but he is an expert in fascism and wrote the different steps of to fascism. And he said in older democracies are especially susceptible to fascism. And he also said that when he looked back and had done the research, the first form of fascism happened in the United States in the form of the Ku Klux Klan. And what Sarah was saying is, when she talked to experts, is that our Jews will be black people. And in this country, and it's already happening the way race is really becoming a part of the shouting match. I'd only want to add that they're right now, Michael Ledeen and Karl Rove are working together, and they didn't leave the Bush administration because to take a vacation early. What they're doing is they're planning all of this, and this is so Karl Rovian. If you look at Bush's brain and how he's used race and the fear aspects of a campaign, whether it's anti-gay or anti-race or whatever, it's very interesting, and it just fits in so well with how previous fascist regimes work.
Okay, Mike. So we should look for Sarah Robinson Truth Out article August 10.
Truthout.org.
Okay. All right, thanks, Mike. Thanks very much for your call. Bill is next from Windsor. Hi, Bill.
Good morning, Kathleen.
Hi, Bill.
The issue that's dear to my heart here is how do we initiate the activity and develop organization to counter the politicians and somehow overcome them so we can develop term limits?
Okay.
And limit the congressman to, I don't know, maybe 8 years, senators to two terms. It just gets to be a career that people get too comfortable with. And it's pretty common knowledge that when you're there long enough, everybody gets corrupted. And in coinciding with that, campaign finance reform. There should not be any special interest money used in campaigns. And I guess where I'm going with this is I would love to see how do we build the steps to get this? Because the people that have to change the law are the ones that stand to lose with it.
Okay. Thank you for your call, Bill.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. Bye. Let's go next to Bill from Mount Vernon. Hi, Bill.
Yes, Kathleen. We as a country and a nation and a people are belatedly going to have to look squarely into the headlights of U.S. capitalism if we are ever going to do a thing about this eternal mess. This recession depression is going to go on forever because no one wants to look at the core root underlying causes of the problem, and they are dirty, diabolical, unethical capitalism. That is the problem. WPR should have programs every day, every week, against the dirty, rotten system. But they are beholden to it. They're afraid of it. They've gotten together in small cabals, and they've just absolutely said that is a topic we cannot touch. Professors, talking heads, think tanks, Forbes, New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Condé Nast, the World Financial Times, none of them want to deal with it. And as a result, there's no hope for this nation or this country ever. It's just hopeless.
Well, I'm sorry you feel that way. What do you think we ought to have?
We've got to get consortiums together immediately. Today yet, we have to get people together to come up with new ideas, novel ideas. Okay. Our old system is worn out and will not work.
Okay. Thank you very much, Bill. But I do want to say personally that there are no cabals here dealing with this issue. We talk about everything, and I think we've probably talked about capitalism, too. On more than one occasion. So thank you for the call. Okay, Randy from Madison. Hi, Randy.
Good morning. I had an idea, but gee, Bill just made me feel so hopeless.
I know. Yeah, he's kind of down, isn't he?
Right. I've been fascinated lately, kind of abstractly, about how much anger is playing a role in, you know, all sorts of events. And then a couple of days, I've just had some real frustration, not to sort anybody out, but with the metro system trying to get to places. And I'm beginning to realize just what a potent drug anger is and why people want to be stupid because of it. And so I don't have a suggestion for a guest, but I would sure like you to find somebody who can talk about anger and what it does to us and what it does to the whole discourse.
In other words, you want to get rid of that anger, right?
I think you can argue that there is some virtue to it, but not very much.
Right. All right. Well, I'm sure people have written books on anger, and I mean, it's an interesting thing, isn't it? I have a problem, hard time with anger. But I'm not as angry anymore about anything. Maybe that just comes with getting old, huh? Not as angry.
I also think we have a system where we ask people to cultivate their anger.
Right.
And that's where I think a lot of this stupidity comes from.
Yeah. And there is such a thing as righteous anger. Maybe you had, you know, every reason in the world to be upset with the metro system. You needed to go somewhere.
Right. But I sometimes think you have, if you're going to act, say, for instance, in the civil rights movement, you had to do it in cold blood. You couldn't do it in anger.
Yeah, right. All right. Well, now I'm going to think about this. Thank you, Randy.
Certainly.
Uh-huh.
Bye.
Bye. Steve from Ladysmith is next. Hi, Steve.
Oh, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just want to say, rather than making up things about senators, you know, why they said what they said and playing their ace card every time somebody says something somebody doesn't like about Obama, we look into why he said it. What part of the bill doesn't he like, and what does it say in the bill that could possibly make him say that? Let's get to the meat.
What bill are you talking about? I'm a little confused.
Well, the senator shouting out, "You lie." Let's
right.
look out why he said you lie. What part of the bill makes him feel that strongly that he says you lie instead of playing the race card and saying, well, he's a racist, like we did earlier this morning? Let's look at what part of the bill he doesn't like and why he feels so strongly that he would say that,
uh-huh.
not play the race card. Let's get into the meat of it. This is Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's look at why he said it, not make up something or claim he's a racist because he said something to somebody. Let's look at the part of the bill that makes him feel that way.
Well, I think we know what part of the bill makes him feel that way.
Right. So what is it? Is it, you know, how is it written? Why would he possibly say that?
I don't know why anybody would say that in Congress.
You know,
why would they say that?
Look at that part of the bill. Let's start dissecting this bill that's so controversial. You know, let's start looking at the bill.
Okay, thanks for the call. We have several. We got to wait till we get a bill. We got lots of different bills floating around. So once there is a bill, believe you me, we're on it. We're on this healthcare issue. If anybody's on the healthcare issue, we are on the issue. So thank you. Let us go next to Lynn from Sturtevant. Hi, Lynn.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm calling because there's a couple of books on tape that I've listened to, and one of them happens to be The Best Democracy Money Can Buy and While America Aged. And both of them talk about things that were going on while we were busy watching, I don't know, The Simpsons or something. It's time for us little people to bond together and fight against Washington. And then the other thing I wanted to say is you had somebody on there with that was talking about health care and obesity and stuff like that. There's a lot of people that are out there that actually know how to lose weight. I happen to be one of them. And I am not credible because I don't have a degree. I just know how to do it. And there's a lot of people out there that just know how to do things, but that's part of the problem.
So how did you do it?
How did I do it? Mm-hmm. I wrote a book on how to do it, and I started a blog. It's called Chat the Fat, and I'm going to continue to put it on there. Basically, I started looking into what is actually in our food and how things are advertised to us, and it's just turning now where when you watch a commercial, it's like as they're telling you what to eat through these commercials, are they putting, like, vegetables and things like that, not as a side dish, but more of a main dish? Because that's how people in the past used to eat. They used to eat a lot of your fruits and vegetables, the things they grew themselves, and a small amount of meat. And it's like we have to look at, we are no longer ditch diggers, so we can't eat like ditch diggers. And that's what I tell a lot of my women that come to me. And I go, you know, I says, if you're going to eat like your husband, you're going to look like your husband. You have to remember you are a woman, and if you're sitting at your desk all day, you can't eat like a ditch digger. So you really have to think, and you have to make decisions. And one thing that was interesting was I looked up because somebody on, it's called sparkspeople.com, which is a free place. And so I looked it up because she said that she had a tomato soup that was 15 calories. This person was from England. So I went back into Campbell's, and I looked to see what they actually have. And there's different foods made for different countries. And actually, there is a 15-calorie tomato soup. But because Americans are so used to eating the sugar, it is a 60-calorie. They just dump a bunch of sugar in it for Americans because that's what we want.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks, Lynn, very much for your call today. Open line for September. The number is 800-486-8655. We're taking suggestions of programs you'd like to hear. If you could be a little specific about, it's sort of hard, well, let's do a show on capitalism. If you can figure out who the guest might be or a book that you've read or something like that, it'll be easier to get a guest to address your concerns. Patricia is next from Madison. Hi, Patricia.
Hi, Kathleen. This is a two-part suggestion. Up north right now, there is an unprecedented black bear slaughter going on. The DNR raised the bear kill licenses by 60% in 1 year because of a UW study funded by the Bear Hunters Association. And they've never killed this many bears. They have 10-year-olds killing bears, and two-thirds of them will die as babies, less than a year old. And this, you know, we know from the science, the new Bear Education Center in Ely, Minnesota, Lynn Rogers has studied bears for 38 years, and black bears are timid. They're friendly, they're playful, they're intelligent, and we do not need to manage them with this kind of violence. I heard somebody say you like dogs. They use packs of dogs, and sometimes the dogs get injured. The second part of this that I propose is that we don't have any media that's living wildlife advocacy at a time when everything is under threat. We have an outdoors page that's just a killing advocacy with no answering media. The public doesn't know anything. I mean, people in the South hardly know we have black bears, much less that there's this huge killing going on for heads on walls. And we really need to be informed at this time of history when we're in this bottleneck of species loss. We actually have 4 times the number of wildlife watchers in Wisconsin than hunters, and they have zero representation for the money they bring to our tax coffers we have no rights for people that don't kill wildlife. None. Never have had. And it needs to be explored thoroughly by some part of our media. Mm-hmm. We have nothing covering this.
Okay, Patricia.
So I can leave some numbers with your staff.
Do you have access to a computer? If you can send us something, that would be easier.
Sure.
All right. It's very easy. I'll just give you Rhonda's is Fanning, F-A-N-N-I-N-G.
Okay.
At WPR.org.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you so much, Patricia. Thanks very much for the call. And we go next to Nancy from Grafton. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. My son listens to shortwave at night, and he hears Alex Jones. I don't know if anyone else in this whole world listens to Alex Jones, but there are some frightening things the man is saying. And whether they're true or not, I do not know. And I just was wondering if anybody else in our listening audience ever hears him, because if they think that this is somebody that should be heard on public radio or, you know, national broadcasting, I would sure like to know, because I'm afraid to even say the things that the man is saying. But I think maybe back in the days when Hitler was designing his Nazi Germany, and I remember I had a neighbor. I lived in up north in on a farm, and we had a neighbor who was German. And I remember that man saying in World War II, he said, you know, he said, if my son gets called to fight for the United States, I will take him out in the barnyard and I will shoot him myself. And I thought, what a horrendous thing, what hatred can do. And I just wondered if this Alex Jones is so full of hatred or if he's got something going on there. So if anybody can figure out how to get a hold of him, or if they even want to on your station, I would appreciate hearing. Thank you.
Did you ask your son why he's listening?
Oh, I know why he listens.
Why?
Because the things, he kind of feels that there are a lot of things that we as citizens of the United States do not know what's going on underground. You know, like you hear about the CIA, you hear about so many different things, and whether it's conspiracy, maybe it's gossip, maybe who knows what, but it gives one pause to think about what can happen when we have a society that's not really well informed. And that's what I'm hearing other people say today about being informed, whether it's banking or wildlife or whatever else it is. We need to expand our knowledge. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Nancy, very much for the call. Mike from Appleton, hi.
Yeah, Kenny, kind of following up on your last program, I had the opportunity to be on. And you asked us to be specific, so I even have a title for a program.
Good.
And it would be How to Get Away with Financial Murder, which is what is happening. And maybe a program on, you know, how we're getting duped, what I mean by we, the taxpayer. You know, what is really going on out there? I mean, I posed a question in your last question, is anybody going to go to jail? And everybody laughed. And, you know, the answer is, of course not. So, you know, what else is going on? A program of that nature, with the type of guests that you had, would be fantastic, in which we could, you know, touch on a series of different points as to, you know, where we're getting ripped off and what can we do about it.
Okay, Mike, thank you. Yeah. John from La Crescent, Minnesota. Hi, John.
Oh, good morning, Kathleen.
Hi, John.
See, one of the segments yesterday was having to do with a gentleman, a doctor that was referring to a more holistic type medicine, and looking at the whole individual and his skepticism towards, let's say the pharmaceutical industry in specific, and that, you know, there are a lot of trials out there and drugs that come to market that don't have evidence-based medicine, meaning outcomes data that were, you know, preventing heart attacks and such. And I thought that a guest that you've had on before would be a great person to also address that, and his name is Dr. Jim Stein from the UW in Madison, and he's a lipidologist, and I think that from my dealings with him, he is an evidence-based medicine believer, but could also shed some light on the other side of that, you know, for instance, what he believes and doesn't believe based on evidence-based medicine, and maybe shed some light on a little bit of that other side, what maybe he sees as unscrupulous or whatnot.
All right, John?
All right, thank you.
Thanks. Thanks for the call. Bobby is next from Stevens Point. Hi, Bobby.
Hey, good morning, Kathleen. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
Of course, congratulations on the big health care forum the other day. That was quite a panel there. My topic would be it's time to revisit the question of peak global oil production. I know you've had guests on before. I think Kunstler has been on and a few other people. But the issue has sort of disappeared from the headlines. It's gone off the radar screen with the economy having gone in the tank like this. But what I'm reading from a lot of people like some of the guests you could have, maybe Kunstler, James Howard Kunstler back, or Matthew Simmons would be a great guy if you could get a hold of him. He runs a finance company for oil and gas infrastructure. And then, or maybe Gail, the actuary from the oildrum.com. I think you could get a hold of her through that website. Or even Richard Heinberg, because what's happened is it disappeared from our news because the oil prices went down. And the reason the oil prices went down is there was this system-wide collapse of, the global economy last year. But what's happening behind the scenes is along with the destruction of demand, in other words, we're not buying as much fuel as we used to, the destruction of supply is going on. So they've stopped a lot of the oil and gas drilling rigs were just idled and will probably never go back in service again. So once we try to recover from this major recession, we're going to run right into the lack of supply again. So what I find frustrating is it just you can't even get a discussion going in sustainability groups or in, like green groups anymore about how do we prepare for this eventual catastrophe. So I think to have a guest on who could maybe paint the broad picture of what's going on behind the headlines.
Mm-hmm.
And the need for local governments and especially agriculture, there is no one in the entire farm sector that's preparing for this. And we in agriculture is the most dependent on oil of any of the sectors other than transportation. So I think time to put that back on the front burner and get people thinking about it again. Thanks for letting me on.
Thanks, Bobby. Thanks for the call. Mike is next from South Milwaukee. Hi, Mike.
Oh, hello. The article that I suggest is the bailout, how Goldman Sachs runs Washington, and by Matt Taibbi, T-A-I-B-B-I, July 9th, the 23rd issue of Rolling Stone.
Okay.
I think it would be of the suburb program.
Yeah, I know that Rob has been trying to get Taibbi. I don't know if it was on that article or another one, but we're on the author. I'm not sure if we're on that issue, but I'll check with him after the show.
In the article, he also talks about why our oil prices were so high last summer, and it had nothing to do with supply and demand. It was a speculation.
Okay, thank you. Let's go next to Leslie from Duluth. Hi, Leslie.
Good morning. First of all, I appreciate your show so much.
Thank you.
I have a couple suggestions, actually. I would like to see a program that deals with teachers and in a perspective that is never addressed, and that is their abbreviated working year. We talk so much about our kids, meaning in the United States, are outperformed by other industrialized nations, and there are many reasons for it. But everywhere else, kids go to school much longer than here, and essentially our teachers work about 180 days, roughly. And at the same time, they complain about their salaries, which are pretty darn good by now, and they have job security that nobody has anymore, because any parent who has kids in school knows there are some wonderful teachers, but there's also the other end of the continuum, and those people should not be in the classroom near kids, and there is no way to get rid of them. So I think that whole discussion having to do with, it is not a full-time job, unfortunately, and yet they are paid quite well. The other thing that I think is a bit under the radar, and that is mad cow disease. The New Yorker had an article a few years ago where they explained very succinctly about the issue of mad cow disease, and it has to do with feeding practices of animals in the United States, which have long been outlawed in Europe, and essentially we still cannibalize cows. Now, I know there must be some updated information, and what brings it to mind is a friend had a classmate who was just diagnosed at Mayo Clinic who died of mad cow disease. Now, obviously, these things aren't broadcast, but someone must be keeping statistics. Incidents are happening, and I do think it would be a very good discussion. In the same vein about food safety, I think someone alluded to it earlier, but the whole issue of additives in food, artificial colors, flavors, all the chemicals and the unpronounceables. I mean, I know books have been written that say if you can't pronounce it, don't eat it. And I think people here in this country need to wake up because, again, we're very far behind Europe, where there is far more attention paid to that subject. And as a result, many of those additives simply aren't allowed in food anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So I think all of these issues have to do with public welfare, and I would very much welcome a discussion.
All right, Leslie, thank you.
Thanks
for your call. Jim is next from Eau Claire. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Kathleen. Thanks for taking my call. Listen, one of the things that we really need to explore is father's rights in divorce and custody cases. I mean, I think Wisconsin is way behind in the way that they allow or allot placement between mom and dad really gets the short end of the stick here. You know, and I understand that there are some dads that, you know, they divorce and they don't take time with their children. But there's a lot of us dads out here that are just wanting time with our children. We want to be parents, and that's what children need. They need two solid parents. It affects everybody because if you're not divorced yourself, you know somebody who's divorced. And the way that, you know, I think that the courts generally allot placement time is mom gets more, and it's not good for the children. There's dads out here that really want to be good dads and parent their children and make them contributing members of society. That's an issue here.
All right, Jim, thank you so much for your call.
Thanks.
Mark from Madison, hi.
Yes, hi, Kathleen, thank you. I would like it if you could interview Richard Gage with Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. Hello?
Richard Gage.
Yes. Yep.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Uh-huh. Thanks for the call. Our number is 800-486-8655, and it's an open line for the month of September. We have one line open right now if you'd like to join our conversation and suggest ideas of shows or guests from 9 to 11 in the morning. We'd like to hear from you. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we go next to Chris from Burlington. Hi, Chris.
Good morning, Kathleen. How's your heart?
I hope it's okay. Thank you for asking.
That's good. I'm glad to hear. You know, I have to go back way back when you came back from being under the weather and say that I was listening to that first show when you came back. And you talked about, you know, smoking, and I as a former smoker, I have to thank you for being so honest and open. And I also was moved enough that I decided I was going to make a little bit more time for my family because of the heartfelt inspiration that you gave when you came back and the gratitude that you showed. So
thank you, Chris.
I want to let you know that.
Thank you.
You touch us out here.
Thank you.
My wife has read a book called Stepping Out of Line by author's name is Nell Merlino, and she is the creator of Take Your Daughter to Work Day.
Oh.
And my wife, because she's not here, I'm calling in on her behalf,
okay.
and she was very inspired by this book. She wants me to read it, and very often if I hear about a book on Wisconsin Public Radio, I'll take a look at it. So I figured if I call up and it gets mentioned on the radio, there's a better chance that I'll read it. So,
That's right. Yeah, you'll be thinking about it all day. Do you have it in the house?
It's right in front of me right
now. All right.
Yeah, we've got it on, it's a new book from the library. And
okay.
So it's a short read, so I don't have an excuse. I'm sure it's only just a little over 200 pages, and knowing you could kick that out in a lunch hour, but not me. So,
great, Chris.
I thought maybe you guys could look her up. She's got a few websites here, countonme.org.
All right.
And makeminemillion.org.
Okay.
And it's published by Broadway Books.
Wonderful. Sounds great.
All right. Take care.
Thank you, Chris. Thanks for your kind words.
Sure. Bye-bye.
Bye. Larry from Madison. Hi, Larry.
Yeah, thank you. I have two different suggestions. Each relates to how the United States gets involved in conflicts around the world. The first suggestion I have is Professor Andrew Bacevich, who is a professor at Boston University. And in particular, I would love to hear him expound on his views about Reinhold Niebuhr, who was a very important, almost formidable intellectual force in the United States in the 20th century. And Professor Bacevich has written the introduction to a book by Reinhold Niebuhr titled The Irony of American History, and there are many issues in that book I wish to hear more from Professor Bacevich about. Many of those issues center around the dangers, even perhaps the futility, of a powerful nation trying to control too much of world history. The other book I'm suggesting is by Naomi Klein, and that book is entitled The Shock Doctrine. Quite a good book also on the United States' involvement in various countries around the world, sometimes through the World Bank, sometimes more directly.
Mm-hmm.
And patterns in that involvement. And if we can recognize those patterns, perhaps we can be wiser in the future about where and when the United States gets involved.
All right, Larry. Thank you. Those sound very good.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Bye.
Wayne from Holman is next. Hello, Wayne.
Oh, it's good to hear your voice.
Thanks, Wayne. Yours too.
I hope you're well.
Yeah,
okay. I have to add one thing. I've taken off my Brewer hat, and I put on a Packer hat.
No.
And guess what else? I have a little tiny hat that's blue and white. It has number 4 on it.
Ah.
Oh, well, thank you, hon, for taking my call.
Yeah, sure.
Real quick, cap and trade, I'm still somewhat in the dark, like your guests or previous callers have said. Maybe we're not all as informed as we should. I'm a conservative, and I'm probably not as informed as I should. I guess, no, I'm not as informed as I should, but I have a guest name, and it's David A. Rednour, R-I-D-E-N-O-U-R.
Okay.
And he's a vice president of the National Center for Public Policy Research. Now, I have to warn you, it's a conservative outlook on cap and trade.
Okay.
But I don't think that makes a difference. You guys have conservatives on your show.
Yeah, we do.
And it's www.nationalcenter, one word,
.org. NationalCenter.org.
Yeah, it's one, National Center is one word, little n. But it's just a it's an interesting perspective, and, you know, I know you guys like to present both points of view. But if you're interested, that's what my thoughts would be. If it's anything you want to discuss, like, he brings an interesting perspective to Cap and Trade.
Okay. Thanks, Wayne.
You have a great day.
Yeah, you too.
Bye-bye, honey.
Bye. Let's go next to Sue. Hi, Sue. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Hi.
I'm calling about teachers' responsibility and the other side of the caller that you took earlier.
Mm-hmm.
If you do put that program on, I heard her say that teachers only work 180 days. It's a part-time job. They get paid real well. That really, really needs to be investigated, because if you would put up hours to hours, that's not a part-time job.
Mm-hmm.
And if you were to do a program on that, I would like to see a good spread panel so correct information is going out to people. And that was my comment.
Okay. Thank you very much for the call. Yeah, we do a lot on education and on teaching, so we're not debating whether or not teaching is worthwhile. It's, I think, one of the more honorable professions there are. But I think the interesting part of that call was whether or not we need to expand a school year here in the United States, which would be an interesting show. We've done that, but not for a long time. Randy is next. Hi, Randy.
Yeah, hi. Thank you for facing the classroom of everybody in Wisconsin making suggestions. It's got to be like teachers facing a classroom of teachers. They have my admiration. Anyway, how about T-Bone Pickens? Boy, if you could get him. He's somebody who's courageously made some suggestions for us and takes criticism and refines his positions and... as a private sector man, has looked at maybe... he reminds me of somebody who would rather light a candle than rail at the darkness, you know. And so I guess I admire people like that, and I think maybe you could get him. Our audience in Wisconsin would probably really be able to challenge him, and he's got some things going on that would, I think, interest people, you know. And he's all for keeping our resources at home. There's more to just converting to natural resources and green resources at home. It's keeping our money at home instead of sending it to our enemies. So we revolve our money, our resources at home, and that those resources, then the wealth doesn't transfer abroad. It stays here. And so... he's got a lot of interesting things to say about converting to green energy makes more sense than just the environment. It makes economic sense, you know. He's really interesting to listen to.
Sure. All right. Good suggestion, Randy.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks very much.
Bye.
Rick from Waukesha. Hi.
Hi, good morning, Kathleen. Thanks
Hi,
for taking my call.
Sure.
I'd like to bring up something that a lot of people may have heard about but just kind of ignore, but it's the... there is rules in both the House and the Senate that no amendment can be attached to a bill that is not germane to the topic. Those were written in the 1700s, but unfortunately, they have to be brought forth by other members of Congress. They choose not to do that. If those rules were enforced, we'd absolutely know what our politicians were really voting for. They couldn't say, I had to accept this because this was in there.
Right.
They'd be completely transparent on every issue, and they would be accountable to their constituents.
Now, what do you call it again when it's just keyed to one issue? What's the name for that? I can't remember.
It's the Germaine Amendment Act or something. It's House rules and Senate rules. One of them, I think, is number 50.
Okay.
But both of them are there. Unfortunately, when they were established in the 1700s, they didn't anticipate the fact that, our congressmen can kind of collude and not bring forth this.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Rick. Yeah. Thank you. Thanks for the call. It'd be interesting to figure out, maybe it, not a full show, but I'll think about that when we talk about some kind of legislation, how all the other stuff gets put in there. You know, it's just... You got to wonder. Marion is next from Madison. Hi, Marion.
Hi.
What I'd like you to talk, to have a show on is something that I heard about, maybe 5 years ago or more, and that's the rule of 40 with regards to a living wage. And the rule of 40 is that it's some sort of an economic philosophy or whatever, that the highest paid person in a corporation shouldn't make more than 40 times the lowest paid person.
Hmm.
So if you want to pay the guy at the top a whole lot, then you got to pay the guy at the bottom a whole lot, too.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is to maintain a middle class out of this, because you're paying everybody enough that everybody adds value to that corporation, whether they're the guy making decisions at the top or they're the person emptying the trash at the bottom.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Great, thanks for the call. We may have time for one more call. It is James from Eau Claire. Hi, James.
Hi. I just wanted to kind of bring to the public's attention that FEMA did some rezoning for flood zones last year and is starting to release that information now. I received a note from my bank a couple months ago indicating that I would now be required to carry flood insurance because I have a small creek about 100 yards from my house, and I was it was determined that I was part of a flood zone now. And so I did some looking into this, and there are forms that you can fill out.
We got about 5 seconds.
We have forms that you can fill out to appeal the process. But just a guess that we'll let people know that that is possible.
Okay. Thanks for the call. Thanks for all of your suggestions, everybody. If you didn't get through, FANNING or DUNK at WPR.org, send your suggestions to both of us. Thanks to John Treader for answering the calls, and thanks for your calls. Be with you again on Monday at 9 on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.